Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to I Was There Too. I'm Matt Gourley. This is the show where I talk to people who were present in the great scenes of mostly cinema history, but sometimes television history. I've done this in the past with the show Deadwood, A, because it's one of my favorite shows ever, and B, it's just objectively one of the best shows ever. And I thought I'd do that again with A, one of my favorite shows ever, and B, objectively one of the best shows ever. I think, at least. True Detective. Season 1. My guest is Azure Parsons. She played Charmaine Boudreau, a.k.a. the Marshland Medea. You might remember her scene with Matthew McConaughey where she's interrogated. It's a very dark scene that reveals she killed three of her children, and then Matthew McConaughey basically tells her she should kill herself. The scene always stuck out to me, not so much in its relation to the overarching plot, but just in the depths to which it goes. And Azure's incredible in the scene, and she's an incredible guest for this podcast, so I was really happy to have her. And the best part is she brought along, at least telephonically, two of her friends from the show as well. Christopher Barry, who played two roles on True Detective, the quadriplegic uncle of Marie Fontenot, who was the baseball player that McConaughey and Woody Harrelson go to visit early in the season, as well as the character of Guy Francis, who also gets interrogated by Matthew McConaughey and incidentally beaten up, and gives them information about the Yellow King, and then later kills himself in his own cell at the behest of some conspiratorial figure that calls him on the phone. These are joyful moments from an upbeat series from HBO. And the second person we talk to is Dave Davis, who plays Toby Boulier, a.k.a. Johnny Joni, the hooker that Matthew McConaughey talks to get some more information about the spaghetti monster killer. This episode is something you can listen to even if you haven't seen True Detective, because I think it will be a way to interest you in that show, but I assume most of you probably already have. It really is one of my favorite shows. I'd put it maybe in my top five of all time, up there with, of course, Deadwood, Slings and Arrows, Strangers with Candy, maybe The British Office. They're shows that when they ended, I felt like I sort of had like gone through a breakup or lost a friend. Not that the characters themselves were so wonderful that I wanted to be in relationships with them. I'm getting carried away here. But that I missed having their stories in my life. So I was really pleased to talk to Azure about True Detective today and get a little bit more insight on what it's like behind the scenes on that production. Before we get started, I Was There Too will be live at Now Hear This Podcast Festival in New York, New York on September 9th. Right there in the afternoon, guest to be announced. Please, if you're in the area or just feel like traveling in, go to nowhearthisfest.com to get tickets for that single day or for the whole weekend where there are a ton of great shows. It's really worth it. I did this last year and had a great time. And finally, if you wouldn't mind, and if you like this show, please review it on iTunes with 5 stars if you're feeling generous. And that helps this show raise in the rankings there on iTunes. Thank you very much for this long intro. And I hope you enjoy what turns out to be a fairly meaty episode. Talk to you next time.
The show, True Detective. The year, 2014. The role, Charmaine Boudreau. The actor, Azure Parsons.
Azure Parsons, tell me what your first impressions were on reading the scene. You're a mother known as the Marshland Medea, which is an amazing name, who kills her children, and then the one man at the beginning of your scene who seems somewhat sympathetic ends it by whispering, if you get the opportunity, you should kill yourself. What were your thoughts when you read that on the page? By the way, it is alarming because all I know of you is how you look in True Detective, which is very different than you look now.
What are you talking about? That's just me without makeup.
You don't have a – you have a very specific wound on your forehead. We'll get to that in a second.
That is a very specific wound.
To my first questions, and we'll all come right back to that.
You know, when I first read it, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I thought – read it. I knew it was HBO and I knew it was going to be good and all that stuff. But when I read it, I thought it was going to be just kind of a procedural detective show.
Sort of like a higher class CSI.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, yeah, just like a really good kind of procedural detective show, because the only thing that they gave me was that scene. And so all I had was the interrogation. So I was like, okay, well, I'm, you know, going in and I'm guessing on a interrogation show. This is good. But it, I just remember feeling like so crushed when I had to read that he told me to kill myself.
In what way? Meaning just, well, I mean, that's some crazy, crazy shit. In fact, I feel like your response to that as an actress is very riveting, because I think I sense you're almost playing betrayal rather than fear of, am I going to die or get locked away? Like, you were so nice to me.
It felt like betrayal.
But you play it that way, and it's so interesting. It was so good.
It felt like betrayal, because the whole time that motherfucker is getting my trust.
He is.
He's getting my trust. He's holding my hand. He's like, I understand you. I understand. I've lost children, and I'm so pained by this. And I'm like, that's all I wanted was love. And then he betrays me like that. And it was just crushing. That's the only thing I felt in it. Because I was just so in it the entire time that I just, I don't know.
But so how do you approach something like that? You personally, that is like, I mean, I know you probably studied acting. Did you go to acting school or?
A little bit.
Okay.
I come from the Meisner School.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask exactly how you approach this, but.
Yeah.
So, you know, having done some of that myself, and you're handed scenes in school, and yeah, oh, this is a drama, or maybe you even get like a Shakespearean tragedy, but this is so dark. Not only are you killing your children, you have someone saying you should kill yourself. Where do you even begin? How did you do it?
Well, I did a lot of research on Munchausen by proxy.
Uh-huh, I was going
to
ask.
Because I wanted to get into what that – see, they didn't really give me much of a character description. They didn't really give me a whole lot. I just had to read what was said in the script about, you know, how Woody's like, you know, have you ever heard of the Marshland Medea? And, you know, she's – and how everybody was saying she was so fucked up. But – you can't approach it, you know, obviously as like somebody being fucked up right, or evil, because they never have those, you know, intentions.
Yeah.
And the more I read about Munchausen's by proxy, if I can say that right.
It's not easy.
Munchausen's by proxy. it's the more I realized that like she just desperately needed to be loved and needed attention and affection, and she did this so people could feel sorry for her.
Interesting. Okay.
And so people could you know, be like, I'm so sorry you lost your child. I mean, there's nothing more sympathetic than a person losing their child.
Right.
So that gave me the entire perspective of the character. Like, and actually the confession that we're writing out, I wrote out the confession for props.
Was that your idea or theirs?
I was mine, because they were going to write it out. And I was like, no, let me write out the confession, because I want it to, like, you know, build a backstory and, like, come up with a – I just wanted to, like, feel her a little bit, because I didn't have much to work on. So I had to, like – I had to figure out, you know, who she was and stuff. So I wrote out the confession, which I'm sorry, I don't remember what's in it.
You didn't keep it?
I did keep it.
You
I,
did?
I did not keep
you didn't.
It. They wouldn't really let
somewhere.
Me keep anything because they were so NDA
not.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know anything about the series at all.
So you had no idea the overarching story or anything?
Nothing.
That's another thing I was going to ask is your scene, plot-wise, doesn't really play in, but character-wise does in a huge way. It's almost as if to show the level to which Matthew McConaughey's character has gotten to, the low level.
Yeah.
It feels a bit like... I know he's getting a confession out of you, but at some point it feels like an assassination, like revenge for losing his daughter and someone that doesn't appreciate
yeah,
their
it
kids.
It possibly is. But there was a theory going around, which I actually knew nothing about.
Okay, give it.
But I loved when everybody was because when True Detective came out, there were all these, you know, people just loved following the mystery and figuring out the story. And there was all these theories coming out about everything. There is a picture in the yearbook when he's looking up Tuttle's school, of a girl that looks exactly like me.
Oh, wow.
Although it's not me. They didn't ask me to take a picture or anything. But it's so – she looks so much like me that I wondered myself if my character was part of Tuttle's school and part of the reason why she was so messed up. Because I know that in the confession that I wrote out, which is pretty twisted I guess I sort of caught on to it because of the Munchausen by proxy stuff, but I wrote out about, like, sexual abuse and, you know, all the things that would make me get to a place of killing my children.
Right.
And needing that kind of love and attention.
It's incredible. I mean...
So it was, when I watched it, I was like, oh, I'm glad I was, like, right on par with that.
Speaking of HBO and Munchausen's by proxy, did you see that documentary they have called Mommy, Dead, and Dearest, I think?
Jesus Christ.
It's
no,
about, it's a real documentary about a mother and her daughter and Munchausen by proxy. And
that's intense.
It is. It's not, I did not enjoy it as a watch. You know, it was,
that's intense. I have a hard time watching that stuff and filling my mind with things like that. I mean, it's really fascinating and I like watching it from a psychological objective point of view. And, but I don't know. I don't know if I can watch that stuff for fun the older I get.
I'm the same way. I feel that way, strangely, about war movies, which I loved as a kid. But when something's fictional, and this is like the darkest scene I think I've ever discussed on this podcast. It's one of the darker scenes.
With the true... The
yours,
oh,
yeah.
The scene I'm in.
Yes, yours.
It's... I don't think I realized how dark it was. Doing it. Like, I just really didn't realize what I was getting myself into because I remember, I mean, I prep for stuff. I prep really heavily and I even wanted to go so far because she was from, I can't remember exactly the small town. I wanted to find the breakdown, but I couldn't find it in my emails and stuff. But she was from like a small town in Louisiana and I went as far as wanting to go out there to hear the accents because Louisiana accents are so regional and the show did such an amazing job at everybody's regional accents.
Are you from the South?
I am from Louisiana.
Yeah, okay.
I'm from New Orleans.
All right, wow.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And we'll get into that accent in a minute. that's a whole other monster. Where was I going with that?
You were going to research her town that she was from, the accent that she...
Yes.
We're both doing the same pound
Yeah, we're
the
both
table.
Doing the same hand gesture.
Like spider crawling on the table.
I don't know what's happening there. I don't remember exactly where I was going with that.
Well, you said you prepared quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I prepared quite a bit, but I didn't know the extent of the method acting that I was getting myself into when I walked on set.
Yourself or everyone?
Everyone else.
Really?
Mostly Matthew McConaughey.
I get that sense.
I mean, Woody, he's so good, but I mean, he was more inclined to like to talk and because he was the one that talked to me the most, but Matthew McConaughey was so in it. And I got the sense that he wanted to be very method about the scene, because the day before, when we were doing makeup tests and hair tests and stuff, he came into the trailer. I have to say, like, there's not there's not many people that have a presence like that. When he walked into the makeup trailer, the air just went. not in a bad way. I mean, it's beautiful. But he just has such a massive energy. I can't explain exactly what that is. You know, they say like some movie stars just have that thing.
Yeah.
And he's got that thing, and it's fascinating. But he came in and he was like taking off his makeup or something and putting on some lotion or something. And he goes, he's right next to me. He looks in the mirror. He goes, "Got some good work tomorrow."
So is he Russ Cole or Matthew McConaughey at that point?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I got him to break a little bit, you know, because I'm in this makeup and they have me like covered in dirt and like I had this like weird little like child tank top on,
yeah.
Like no bra, this like weird pants. And I did this thing where I got him to dirty my belly because I didn't know how much of me was going to be seen. And I just kind of wanted to poke it out like a little girl. So I was kind of walking around set, like just kind of rubbing my belly going. Because everything was so, like you walk into that interrogation room where everybody was on set and the air was so thick. Like I felt like I could swim through it.
Uh-huh.
Not just because of the humidity, but just because of the energy. It was just so intense. And I just walked in and I was like, Jesus Christ, I feel like I should have prepared even more. And I prepared a lot, but I felt like I should have, I just didn't know what I was getting myself into. I felt a little in over my head.
You said you got him to break a little bit?
I did. I don't know. I just kept asking him questions and he would kind of stare straight ahead and be like, mm-hmm.
This is between takes?
Is it between takes?
Okay, yeah.
Because I wouldn't say that I get method about things, because as in Meisner, I really love just kind of like fully immersing myself and living in the moment. So, and just kind of like living within that and whatever character I've created and everything, I just kind of go from that. Because it's really, I really didn't want to live within the Marshall Medea's head for that long between takes, because I felt like it would have driven me a little bit crazy. But I understood that he really wanted a lot out of that scene and was really very focused on it. But, you know, I would ask him questions, and we had a mutual friend that I mentioned that made him laugh. And I would be like, hey, what kind of cigarettes you smoking? Because he just kept having these.
Even between takes, he was rolling.
Sometimes, yeah. And I was like, are those herbal? Or I just kept cracking stupid jokes. It was just really dumb. And every now and again, I would get him to crack a smile, and that was real nice. That was real nice.
That's got to feel good, especially if, let's say, for instance, he is staying in character, just to get that character, Russ Cole, to even crack a smile is no. Does he smile in the entire 8 episodes? Maybe at the end? Maybe?
I don't know if he does, because even the scenes where he's like with his girl and he's like supposedly happy,
right.
He does this weird, did you notice when he's dancing with the girl, he keeps his hand straight and he's super stiff?
Yeah.
In one of those scenes, I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah.
I think the show's really funny in all its thickness.
Oh God, yeah.
Like the scenes between Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are so funny, because Woody's just, his reactions to him are just great.
I've probably watched this season 5 times, maybe.
Really?
I love it. I love True Detective so much. I even love season 2. I think I'm one of 3 people, but I really enjoyed it. I don't know what it is. So that's why I'm so excited to have you here.
It's funny. I'm excited too, because I feel like there's so much to talk about. I don't know if I'm making a cohesive
line. It doesn't matter.
I
feel the same way, because I have so many questions. Let's go back to the beginning.
How did you
end up in this? Just a standard audition, or was it something else?
Oy. So they apparently, I mean, from what I was told, they had a really hard time casting that role. I don't know why. I don't know what they were looking for. But it was being cast locally in New Orleans, because the beautiful thing about that show is it was really heavy on the local talent
mm-hmm.
in New Orleans, which I thought was great because there's so many talented people down there.
And they're people you don't see all the time, too.
Yeah,
even in
you don't, exactly.
HBO shows, they tend to reuse a lot of the same people. So they would pop up in supporting roles on the show, but the meat of the show was so many new faces.
Yeah, and I think that's really beautiful and important for a show like that. You know, when you have all these, like, these characters, because they were such great characters that, but it was accurate for Louisiana and those small towns and those places.
Were you living there at the time?
No, I've been living in LA for 11 years.
Okay.
I moved out here after Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. But what happened was Megan Lewis, who was the local casting director down there, since they were having a hard time finding the role, they called me because they knew that I could work locally and asked me, and asked me if I would come down and audition for this. And I was like,
come down to Louisiana just to audition?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was like, I want to go down to Louisiana to do this because, like, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about it. And
at this point, did you know McConaughey and Harrelson were attached, or that it was HBO? You knew those things.
I knew that it was HBO, and I knew that Matthew McConaughey and Woody were attached, but I didn't. I don't know if that, like, that didn't like make me go like, yeah. I mean, I think they're
just made your decision harder.
No, I didn't. I thought that they. I think they're amazing, and I have so much respect for them, especially Matthew McConaughey. And I'll get into that in a minute because he's one of the most generous, giving actors I've ever experienced. But so Megan Lewis called me to come down for this, and so I sent them a tape. Because I think I was in the middle of a bunch of stuff, and I couldn't get down to Louisiana to audition for it. So I sent them a tape, and then they called me back within like a day or so and was like, okay, we want you to send in another one. So, and we want you to do this. And so I did.
What were the adjustments they had you do? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't even know if there were major adjustments. I think they just wanted me to do it again for some reason because it was going to somebody else. Or
okay.
I'm not sure exactly what that process was. But I remember them specifically saying, don't wear any makeup. You know, they want you to be really rough. And I think I had just basically the description of how Woody Harrelson read it before that scene, you know, about the Marshall Medea and stuff. So I the entire time I made, like, they didn't really know what I really looked like until after the show was done, or until after we finished the scene, when I washed off my makeup and I went to say hello to them afterwards and be like, you know, thank you guys. This was really fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So I'd made myself really, like, I think I remember making my face really red, like I'd been crying a lot, like really red around my eyes and my nose, and, you know, kind of roughed myself up a bit. And because I had a good idea of what Louisiana was like and what being impoverished in Louisiana was like, because I grew up that way. So I love getting into, like, the realness and dirtiness of things. It's one of my favorite things to do. I was actually always really glad that I wasn't one of the girls that had to get naked on the show.
Yeah.
Because I'd much rather play someone like I played on the show.
There's a lot more
small,
to sink your teeth into.
As small as it is, it was more gratifying and satisfying for me.
Interesting.
But so they loved what I did, and actually had me, I think a couple weeks later, had me go down to set in Louisiana. And I had to audition in Cary Fukunaga's trailer with Nick, how do you say his last name?
Pizzolatto.
Pizzolatto.
Yeah.
I just don't want to, like, butcher these guys' names. So the casting director, Megan Lewis, the local casting director down there, she was in the trailer with me, and we had to wait for them to, like, finish shooting a scene. And so I was like, I was like maybe like 2 feet away from, a foot away from them, like in this small trailer, having to audition for this scene.
And you're reading with the casting director?
I'm reading like right in front of Cary and Nick, and the casting director's on the side of me, and she's filming it on her phone. And I'm just like, and they get me into the scene and I just start crying immediately. I don't know why. Maybe I was nervous. There's just like something, because I prepped for it as much as I could. And it was just such a bizarre experience. I've never gone down to a set and auditioned in the director's trailer. Uh-huh. It was just so intimate, and which maybe they did that on purpose because the interrogation scene was really intimate.
Right.
You know, so so it was really fascinating. And Carrie was very blank-faced and was like, all right, all right. But Nick was like, wow, wow, how did you cry like that?
Well, that was one of my questions.
Well, the difference is when I was entering the scene, I couldn't – I think I was nervous – I felt in over my head with these guys because I don't think I realized how serious everything was.
But that's a wonderful trait as an actor, to be able to translate that to crying and let that be kind of an analog to what your character is feeling. Having dabbled a little bit in acting myself, I do not possess that talent. And that is something that when I see it, it's so, I don't know, it's really remarkable.
How do I answer that? What's the question there?
There was no question. It was just a hand-handed compliment.
No, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
But when you were saying McConaughey was very generous, that had to help your performance as well, because it really does seem like there is a feedback loop going in your scene that it would be maybe a little easier than most scenes to get swept up in. Is that right?
I'm really glad that translates.
It does.
That makes me really happy, and I think that that has a lot to do with Matthew McConaughey. And I have such the utmost respect for him now. Carrie Fukunaga wanted me to, because there wasn't a whole lot to do for me to do in the scene. And he wanted me, like, I was wearing this jacket, and he wanted me to kind of, like, fidget around with it and play with it. And, like, figure out ways to give me a little bit more to do. And Matthew McConaughey was giving me so much. Like, a lot of the stuff that didn't end up in there, he's improvising and, like, telling me these stories and, like, trying to get me there. Because I don't think that I had a really hard time getting there because of the nervousness and because of feeling over my head. Like, I couldn't – there was something that I wasn't quite in it yet, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like we sat there for days, but I know I was only there for a day. It might have been a 12-hour day. It was a really fucking long day.
Really? Do you have any idea how many times you would have done that scene?
How many times we did it?
Yeah.
Like, how many takes we did?
Yeah.
Well, they had a lot of different angles on it, so we did it a lot. Mm. We did it a lot. And they really really, the fascinating thing is they really stayed on my coverage for a really long time. And Matthew McConaughey gave me everything, even when the camera wasn't on him. And he wanted me to get there. He wanted me to – he wanted me to do the best that I could do. Like, that's what I mean by him being so generous, is that he so many actors are very much in their own performances. And, you know, so many people aren't even there for their own coverage. I've had to act against nothing mm-hmm. because an actor didn't want to stay for their coverage or stay for my coverage. You know what I mean? They like, aren't even there. And I'm, like, acting to somebody, like a PA reading the script. But the fact that he, you know, I mean, we were on my coverage for a long time, like a really long time. Carrie Fukunaga wanted me to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. He kept just whispering in my ear, go deeper, go deeper.
He would actually come up and whisper in your ear?
Yeah, he would. Wow. He's like, that's great, that's great. Just go deeper, that kind of sadness, that, you know, more sadness. That's great, you know. And Matthew McConaughey, like, talked me through it. He, like, pushed me there and, like, said these things that he was just, like, he wanted to break me so bad. And so there was this, I mean, the whole thing felt very real. Like, we were so in it and, like, sweating in that room for hours. And the fact that he gave me everything.
It's like his motivation to get you to give it a performance as an actress is his motivation to get the confession out of Charmaine.
That's what it felt like. It really did. It really felt like that. And that was really, really beautiful and really, really rare. And very supportive and cool. And, you know, at one point I realized that something that I was doing, you know, wasn't working, like trying to give them more. I at some point I stopped and I realized he's so still that I'm just going to stop doing everything I'm doing and like only feel it.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because doing True Detective is like that scene and that experience changed me as an actor. Like I've never approached it the same way. I've never gone backwards from there. Like it's like that was the moment that like said just fucking feel it.
It's like taking a master class or something.
Yeah, it really was, and the how giving he was just so beautiful.
Wow. Now, what's interesting is Woody Harrelson basically has one line in the scene and then he leaves.
Jesus, lady, you ever hear of a fucking condom? So funny.
So how much was he present in the creation of the scene? Or I imagine it's really just you and McConaughey all day. I mean, was Woody Harrelson kind of in and out, or how did that go?
He was in and out, and he's hilarious to me. He was in and out and just kept looking at me with these, like, big eyes. Like, why are you looking at me that way? And he because he would pass by me and just give me this, like, this just curious, bizarre look. Like, he was kind of, like, I thought it was because it was the way that I looked, that I looked kind of rough. And he was just a little freaked out by me. But he later told me, he was just like, you were just so in it.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, he was like, I just couldn't believe how in it you were. And he's like, I asked Nick to give you more lines.
Oh, my God.
Because he's like, I wanted to see what you would do with it. But he said no. Because Woody was an executive producer on the show.
Right. They both were, right? Are they?
I think so. I mean, I don't want to give you the wrong information.
I don't know. But speaking of how you looked, how much... You said that you got to request some dirt on the belly, but how much say did you have in her overall look? Because you have a kind of cut or laceration or something. It looks like you've been hit by something very specifically on your forehead. You've got messed up skin that makes me think you've got some kind of meth problem or something. There's so many little clues there, and I don't do this with most shows, but like a lot of people watching this, I did watch it. Kind of looking.
Everybody thought it was a clue.
Or just not even a clue, just like there's depth here. Even if it's not supposed to be a clue, I just felt like people have thought about the details on this show, and it's so nice.
Well, I will say that that has a lot to do with the makeup artist. Her name is Felicity Bowring, and she... So... I went through a couple different processes with wardrobe and then hair. I mean, I think this was a several-day process. And then they didn't figure out the makeup until I just showed up on the day of the shooting. And like I said, I'd kind of messed up my face a little bit with, like, making it red and stuff. So they kind of saw some of that in the audition and didn't really – I don't think Carrie or Nick saw exactly what I look like without all that stuff. The makeup artist was so incredible. I don't know. I think she just saw – I mean, that was – I think that was purely her creation. Wow. I mean, I know that – I'm sure Carrie had something to do with it. But I know when I showed up on set, both Matthew and Carrie were like, holy shit. I mean, everybody was like, what the fuck? And Carrie was like, what's that child bite on her forehead? What is that?
Yes, it is.
That was purely the makeup artist. I mean, that was purely her – thing. I mean, I think
it looks like a bite or like the back end of a hammer, or I don't know what it looks like, but yeah.
I think it was supposed to be like pock marks. Like I'd been picking at my face because of the whole meth
that made sense,
theme throughout the show. It's meth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the whole meth thing throughout the show. I mean, my teeth were green, which you don't really fully see. Uh-uh. Like they'd put, you know, chap lip stuff.
Yeah.
All over my lips, like my skin was peeling off. Like it was supposed to be that I'd like been picking at my face. And I'm sorry to give you bad news, but as far as I know,
okay.
I don't think it has anything to do with any sort of clues or anything. Because I had seen where a couple people had like pointed it out and then pointed out the same kind of thing on somebody else's face and was like, does this have to do with the, you know, is this some mark of carcosa? I don't know.
I just thought maybe it was something you character-wise had sort of found or something. But I never dreamed that it would go so deep into the mythology. But.
Well, we had a conversation. Me and the makeup artist had a conversation and she, you know, she's like, so – I mean, there's always a little bit of like, so, you know, how do you want to look? Like,
that's
what do you,
nice.
how do you see this looking? And I was like, just fuck me up.
Yeah. That's more fun. God. Yeah.
And she was like, she painted in like, cause my skin's pretty see-through. So she painted in all my veins.
Oh my God.
And you know, she drew on top of them. So it looked really real. And I mean, I loved what she did and I was just, it was so good.
Like, that was great.
Carrie was just like, wow.
I want to ask you about something, and you can say as little about this as you want or nothing at all, but the Cary Fukunaga director, writer Nick Pizzolatto thing, people seem to think they had like a creatively successful relationship but personally disagreeable. Some people say that Cary Fukunaga's absence on season two is kind of proof that he was the real linchpin of season one, but personally, because I like season two, I don't know. I'm curious if you had any sense at all of this on the set.
I wasn't there long enough to get a sense of their relationship.
Yeah.
I do think that Cary Fukunaga is brilliant. I think he's a genius. And he has a very specific feel and style. And I think that had a lot to do with the success of season one and how it felt. And, and you know, because the feeling of it is its own character.
Yeah, it has a cohesion that the second one definitely lacks a little.
The atmosphere is its own character, and he directed all 8 episodes
and
was very involved in that. I mean, he was on set constantly and was telling stories about, you know, how he, like, got these bunnies because he, like, was on set so much he needed something.
Wait, he had bunnies brought to set?
Yeah, he, like, bought these pet bunnies. And he was telling stories about, you know, how he wanted, because he's living on set so much, he wanted something something good.
Especially
was living
he's dealing
in this
with
world.
Something so dark, yeah.
Yeah, but he told me this story about how one of the, like, he tried to get a partner for this little bunny that he bought, but then the bunny murdered the other bunny.
Oh, my God.
And it was just constant. And he's like, I just need some light.
And so he got more darkness from...
I guess so.
Oh, God, this hits home. We had 2 bunnies and they got eaten by bobcats.
Jesus.
I know.
I had a bunny once.
It doesn't end well for bunnies, does it?
It really didn't.
You said that McConaughey did a little improvisation, and so was Pizzolatto on set most of the time kind of working with that, or were you guys free to roam within the dialogue? Because it seems very specific, the dialogue.
The dialogue that ends up in the scene that we did is all in the script.
Mm-hmm.
But we said a lot of stuff, or Matthew did, said a lot of stuff to just be in it, like, because we shot so much.
Yeah.
But it didn't end up in the show. I kind of was hoping some of it would, because when I actually start crying, when he's like, we got some things to talk about, he said something to me that was so, I wish that I remember what it was, but I busted out crying because of what he said.
And you don't remember.
I don't remember, unfortunately. This was 5 years ago at this point. How long ago?
Well, it came out in 2014, so you probably have 4 years ago, maybe.
4 years ago, maybe,
three
that
or
we
four
shot
years
this?
Ago, yeah.
Yeah, I have no sense of time.
It's a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle. I have a funny meme that I'm going to send you about that.
Okay.
I'm not a memer.
I'm not a memer either, but I will take it.
This is the only meme that I like.
Well, I kind of hoped you'd come in and just start cutting up some Lone Star beer cans and making figures out of them.
Welcome to Carcosa. God.
What was your response when you saw this?
So what were you saying?
I don't know. I think you answered it. But when this finally came out, what was your reaction and your friends and family? Like, A, just to the series, but also seeing you in this role, people that knew you.
First of all, I didn't talk about it because I had no idea what the show was.
Interesting.
And I don't always talk about stuff that I've done unless, you know, ABC is like, tweet about this,
right.
We're doing this, you know, unless I'm like a big part of the show,
yeah.
Where I had a show where I had to like tweet about stuff and like promote it and all that stuff. But I normally kind of keep things a little quiet. So people were very surprised when they saw it, especially because it was because people loved it so much. And they were like, why didn't you tell us? I was like, I don't know. I didn't think about it. yeah. Well, it's really weird because it's like that's the thing because it's like it was such a small role to me. I didn't think it was a big deal.
Did you watch it as it was coming out?
I didn't.
Week by week? Oh, okay. Interesting.
I didn't. It takes me a little while to watch stuff because I like to be removed from it, and I want to approach things as a viewer.
So what was your feel when you watched it? Not just for your performance, but just watching
the
show.
Holy shit, this is great.
That's how I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like it was just like I kind of got like this really funny feeling in my stomach where I was like, whoa, this is so cool.
I rewatched True Detective before it was even over. Like after episode 7, I went, I'm going to go back and watch all 7 episodes before
That's
episode
awesome.
8 because I feel like I wanted to catch things that I felt like I would need to know for episode 8. And
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was very satisfied.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. To go back to the improv, the improvisation stuff, the only thing that was in the script that I said, some of my stuff made it in there, but it was just little ad lib things. But my stuff was, you know, when I was like, birth control's a sin, but a child is a wonderful thing. That's the only line that was in this, that was in the script for my stuff. But I said like little things, like I think at the end I said, wait, you know, stuff like that. So that actually made it in. I mean, there's no brilliance there. But
I'm calling the WGA. You deserve writer's credit. So
it just felt like it felt like I needed something, and I got away with whispering, whispering things. No, wait, okay.
I'm very excited about this because it's rare, but I love it when my guests come in with like ready to talk, but also with ideas. So you set us up with a surprise. We're going to talk to a couple other people from True Detective.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. So first up, let's call Chris Berry. So let's talk really briefly about who he played. He actually played two separate characters in the first season.
He did. And I think Chris Berry is brilliant. And I mean, he was in Django, like Quentin Tarantino loves him. He works all the time. He's such an amazing character actor. I actually worked with him I first met him on a movie called Paradise that Diablo Cody directed.
Oh.
And then I worked with him again on a show called Salem, where he played like this crazy, like blind.
And you're
like
a regular on that show.
Wood
right?
elf. No, I'm a recurring.
Okay,
like,
recurring.
Like recurring, whatever you want.
My
call
friend,
it.
My best friend James, is a music editor on that show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think he's just everything he does is so good. And I love the fact that he played two characters on the show that you cannot tell them apart.
Yes.
I mean, you can't tell the
I would have never known. I was surprised when you called me and said this. He plays the quadriplegic uncle of Marie Fontaine.
Is that right? The baseball player, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That they go visit early on in the season.
Yes, he does.
On a lead. And then he plays the guy that Matthew McConaughey interrogates to get a clue about the Yellow King. And he gets him to confess, and then later, the secret conspiracy or cabal gets him to kill himself in his own cell. He cuts his own wrists after a telephone call.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think he's so good in that scene, and he has a really nice story to tell you about him and Matthew McConaughey in that scene.
All right. Let's dial it up.
Hello.
Chris Berry.
Azure.
Welcome to Carcosa.
Carcosa.
All right, so I think we're looping you into the conversation here.
Okay, cool.
I think we're recording, right?
We are. Hi, Chris. I'm Matt Gourley. Thank you for taking this call.
Oh, no problem. It's nice to meet you, my friend.
It's nice to talk to you, and it's nice to be sitting across from and talking to someone on the phone. You guys are part of a very exclusive Interrogated by McConaughey club.
Yes. We both have been traumatized by Matt McConaughey.
So deeply.
She says that you have a little tale to tell about being beaten up by McConaughey. Can you share that with us?
Yeah.
First of all, your performances in that season are incredible. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I thought, honestly, the cast just from top to bottom was outstanding.
True.
So I feel like I'm one amongst many that really had a chance to do some really great stuff with some great people. But okay, this is actually a story that I really like to tell. Me and Matthew had just been shooting the breeze for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes before the scene started. They were setting it all up, and it's this very small interrogation room. So it's a really intimate scene. So right before the scene starts, he kind of pulls me aside and he says, "Hey, listen, man, the scene is pretty intimate scene, man. We're not going to be able to really fake it. I'm going to have to rough you up a little bit. So you're going to be all right with that."
What do you say?
And the thing is that you know, I'm born and raised in Texas myself. And so that we had that in common. I went to the University of Texas for undergraduate school, and we're both huge Longhorns fans. And so we have this kind of Texas thing going on. And so I just looked at him and I said, "All right, man, but I tell you what, do me a favor." He goes, "What's that?" And I said, "Put some pepper on it. Don't hit me like a little girl."
Oh, shit.
And he just looks at me and he goes, "Well, all right." I wouldn't expect anything less from a man from San Angelo, Texas. and then he proceeded to ring my bell for like 12 takes.
Oh my God.
So, the thing is watching that, I was like, Jesus Christ, I think it looks like he actually hit him.
Yeah, he really did. And the thing is that the stunt coordinator, which is a guy named Mark Norby, he just was absolutely furious with us because I initially had a gator back. It's one of these things that put on your backs for when I get slammed into the wall as sort of a pad, but the shirt kept coming up when he would grab me and stuff. So it really wasn't working. So we took that off. And so literally by the time I went home, cause we really only shot for about half a day, but it was like 12 takes, 13 takes, something like that. Various angles and, you know, various lens sizes and stuff. But when I got home, I mean, my head was hurting. I had to take aspirin. I woke up the next morning and feel like I had done, like I'd been working out all day. I was just so sore. I literally had trouble getting out of bed. I was so sore. But you know what? It was awesome because it looked so real because it was real.
And it really does.
It looks good. It's got to be a bit of a badge of honor, right? I imagine if you got the same exact beating in a real life context, it would hurt immediately. But with the adrenaline and the scene and the source of the beating, it's got to feel a little bit like it hurts so good, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And the thing is that this was my first time. This was my second time to work with Matthew because I played Danny Fontenot several episodes before this. But this was the first time I really got a chance to go head to head with Matthew and, like, you know, back and forth, very kind of, you know, meaty scene. And so I fully admit I was terrified. I was like really, really terrified and really nervous.
That's how I felt.
Did you? Yeah.
I did, yeah.
I mean, there's something about him. I mean, I subsequently worked with him. I did a film with him called Free State of Jones where I worked with him every day for months. And so I've since gotten beyond that. But at the time, I was really terrified. And I was thinking to myself, oh, crap, you know, I'm so scared. How am I going to be able to play this? And then I realized it's actually kind of perfect because my character is terrified.
Yes.
So literally when you're watching me do the scene, half the terror is just working with Matthew McConaughey for, you know, it was really intimidating and scary. And so, like, I didn't feel anything. I had no idea what was going on. Like, literally, halfway home, I realized, wow, you have a headache, dude. I think I'm being smacked in the head by Matthew McConaughey like 60 times.
You felt the pepper.
But it was so worth it.
Go ahead. Well, how did it come to pass that you ended up in two different characters?
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of cool. Actually, Cary Fukunaga came up with this idea. What happened was Megan Lewis is the local casting director. Sometimes she'll use actors to help her read for other actors for callbacks and stuff like that during the auditioning process.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually got me and another actor named Dane Rhodes, who's a local, who's a fantastic actor, who played one of the detectives with Marty Hart and Russ Cole. She got me and Dane to help during the reading process. So for about 2 weeks, we were, you know, two or three times a week, we were in the room with Nick and Cary reading actors. And so they got to sort of watch us read all these different roles that we were never going to play, but we just, you know, they watched us, you know, do our thing. And so at some point during this process, Cary asked me in the room while it was sort of a lull, he said, "Hey man, would you like to read for another character?" And I was like, "Well, sure." And I mean, they'd already offered me the role of Danny, so I was like, "Well, sure," you know. And so they had me read the guy Francis role, and I get a call a couple days later. "Hey, they want you to play Guy Francis as well. You know, they figure you can just change up your look, and it'll be fine." And so when I played Danny Fontenot in the first episode, it was just a day's worth of shooting. And during sort of a lull on set, Cary and I were talking, and he said, "Listen, man, I just wanted to let you know I just didn't feel like Danny was enough for you to get, you know, enough of a role to use your talents, and I just wanted you to come play Guy Francis as well because, you know, I think you're really good, and I'd like to use you more than just a small role."
God, that's
so,
cool.
That's so good.
It felt really, really good. I mean, it was one of the coolest things. I mean, actors, I don't care who you are, if you're an actor, being told that your talent is appreciated is huge. It is. We all crave it, you know. I mean, it might not be obvious about it, but we all love to hear that. Am I right?
Please tell me I'm good.
Tell me I'm worth something. So that's somebody as cool as Cary Fukunaga, who I totally respect as a director, I think he's just amazing.
He's
to have
incredible.
Him say something like that to you is just really, really awesome. So that's how I got to play two different characters on such an amazingly awesome TV show.
That's got to feel good.
So
all right,
good.
I have one last question before we let you go. How long did you have to sit in that pile of blood?
Oh, you mean after I got killed?
Yeah. It's interesting you say got killed as opposed to killed yourself.
Or, actually, after I killed myself.
Yes. You're walking that back? Is there still more to this conspiracy here?
No.
Did you get killed?
But you essentially were ordered to kill yourself.
Right. Well, this is my theory. They never really told me. But, well, I actually talked to Nick about this a little bit. Whatever I heard on that phone call was enough to motivate me to go ahead and end it. Because I think that the network was so deep that, guys, if he had anybody that he cared about in his life, they probably would have gone. They probably would have been killed if Guy didn't kill himself.
Right.
So that's my theory. Although Nick didn't actually come out and say it, he just sort of led me to believe that was what he's implying by that scene. So, but as far as the pile of blood, I can't remember. It only took about a half a day to shoot. It was a pretty short scene, so probably about an hour. But it, you know, that wasn't the worst fake blood incident I've ever had. I worked with Quentin Tarantino, and I got shot a lot. And
were you squibbed up?
Oh God, yes, multiple times. At one point, I'm laying on the floor, just covered in blood, and Quinn looks at me and he goes, "We got to figure out more ways to shoot Chris." Like literally, I mean, it was like a project for him to see how many ways he could shoot me.
So you've been over squibbed by Tarantino, beat up by McConaughey.
Yeah. There, I mean, those two for your bucket list, right there.
Yeah,
bam,
that's incredible.
And I hit it. Like I can't even think. And really, I mean, if I died tomorrow, I'd feel like I had a pretty good run of it, you know?
Yeah.
Just for those two things alone.
Chris, thank you so much. I have this exclusive club, not just that you two have been interrogated by McConaughey, but also that both of your scenes end with someone telling you to kill yourself. It's a really elite club.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate
Maybe
that.
I killed myself too.
Yeah, I know. That was heartbreaking, actually. I mean, you're so good, Asher. You're
oh,
so good.
Thanks, man.
Chris, so thank awesome. You so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no worries. It's my pleasure. And Asher, I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yes, thank you so much for being. I'm so happy we could be involved
thanks
in
for
this.
Asking.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. All right. Love you, man. Bye.
Bye.
Love you too.
All right, so now we're going to call Dave Davis, who plays Johnny Joni, the hooker whom Matthew McConaughey visits in that bar, to get more information about the spaghetti monster or killer. If you haven't seen it, sorry.
Hello, King.
Let's give him a call.
Hello?
Dave Davis.
Hey, what's up, Azure?
You're on a podcast.
I am?
Yes.
Hi, Dave. I'm Matt Gourley. Thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. How are y'all doing?
We're doing very well. We're talking all about True Detective. I'm a huge, huge fan of the show, and your performance was fantastic.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about Johnny Joni and what your scene was like with McConaughey. How was that experience for you?
Am I allowed to curse on your podcast?
Yeah, in fact, we encourage it.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, it was really fun. When I auditioned for the role, I kind of made up my mind that my character just really wanted to fuck. And when I booked it, I think it was partly because I looked right in Cary Fukunaga's eyes in the audition room and was like, we're going to fuck. I didn't say that, but that's what my eyes said.
Well, he is very
and
pretty.
So, When it came time to do the scene itself, I was in, you know, full drag and everything, which I wasn't for the audition. The first time I met McConaughey was basically in a rehearsal, and that was the same kind of mindset that I was bringing to my specific motivation in that moment of that scene for the character was it's on, and we kind of looked up. They're both in character, and it was very interesting. And we stayed in character for the first several hours of our filming that. And then at some point, I leaned across the table at him, and I said, Killer Joe was my shit. And he was like, what? And I dropped the Southern accent, and then we both dropped our characters, and we talked about acting a lot. And it was a really great experience. It was a very fun scene to do.
When you were in character between takes up until that point, what were you guys talking about? Were you just kind of improvising or just having like character standoffs?
A lot of improvising. He was smoking herbal cigarettes and I insisted on smoking Marlboro Reds. And at one point, like I offered him one of mine and he was real cool. He went like, it's not my brand. He had just done the Dallas Buyers Club, and I had just done a project called Starve, which I'm not equating the two, but we were both very hungry. And we talked about kind of like body control and dedication to roles and how to mix real life and fantasy life and how to make them both real and both relevant without being delusional allowing the fantasy world to take over the real world.
Right.
That's really cool.
How much of the overall plot or story did you have a sense of? Because your scene is very specific. You talk about the scarred spaghetti monster man and all that. Did you have an idea of what the overarching idea was, or you just knew that this was what you had to say and it was very specific?
I was only given the script to the episode that I was in. Uh-huh. But both Nick Pizzolatto and Cary Fukunaga were very, very communicative and great at just kind of filling in all the gaps, all the questions that I had about who this person was and where he came from and why he was doing the things he was doing. They had really wonderful thought out answers to all of those questions, and it was a pleasure to work with them.
Yeah, my experience was the same.
That's really cool. Great. Okay, I have a quick question about how much say you got on your wardrobe and your costume, because it's amazing. Like, whose idea was it to keep like the kind of drag and mustache combination?
I wish I could tell you exactly. I actually just worked with one of the costumers again, but it was partially inspired by Prince, and the character was partially inspired by a friend, and at least part of my physicality was, and he is not hyper feminine in the way that he dresses, or even in the way that he acts, but I knew that it was possible to be one thing and act one way. And I think what makes people interesting is the dichotomies between those things. So it's possible Absolutely. To be wearing a dress and have fingernail extensions and hair extensions in and high heels on and have a mustache, because that's who I am.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I really loved about it so much, because you could have easily gone over the top with this character and you didn't, and it was just a perfect performance.
Dave, thank you so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it, and your job on this show was really, really great.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad you could be involved in this. It makes me really happy. Thank you so much for letting us call you.
It was my pleasure. I'll be back in LA tomorrow night, and I'm having a housewarming party next weekend. I'll give you a call.
Great. I'll be there. Great.
Perfect.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Love you, man. Bye.
Bye.
Azure, thank you so much for setting all this up, for taking us on this journey into the world of Carcosa, and you were just wonderful.
Of course. Is there anything else you want to know?
The only other thing I want to know is what it's like to do a Latuda commercial, because whenever I watch a pharmaceutical commercial, I wonder what is it like on set when they say, walk this way, look to the sky, ride a bicycle. They're always very vague sort of things, but they're all the same. What was your experience on that?
You know, I just showed up and did what they told me to do.
That's good enough.
But one of my favorite things about that whole Latuda commercial is that I remember somebody sent me a meme that was so funny to me, because it was a picture of Charmaine Boudreau next to the character I played in Latuda, a commercial, and it was like, well, looks like the antidepressants are working. It's like, as the same person. Oh. Wait, I do want to ask you a question. I have heard you have perfect wigdar.
I do.
Okay, so am I wearing a wig?
You're not wearing a prop wig. You may be wearing extensions or something, but your hairline is real, right?
My hairline is, but I'm wearing a wig.
So are you wearing like a bumpet or a back piece or what?
No, what they did was they just left my hairline and then put the wig like.
All right.
Back
so that's
here.
A fair answer for me to say, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. My reputation precedes me, and I have yet to be taken down. This is very important to me. I want to say this too about True Detective.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
wigs are incredible.
Yeah.
They are some of the best.
Anne Morgan.
Well, yeah. Anne Morgan, I don't know what you're doing, but it's the Lord's work.
Yeah.
All right, Azure, you can be heard on James Urbaniak's podcast called Tomorrow, which is fantastic. Salem Astronauts Wives Club, where can people find you now? What are you working on? Take us out.
Well, you know, I'm working on getting work.
Well, I have no doubt it will be coming very soon.
Where can they find me now? I'm in LA.
Okay. You live very near the studio. So
I do.
We'll give you that general direction. Thank you so much for talking.
I mean, do you want my Twitter account?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's all my social media handles are at Azure Parsons.
Okay. It's that easy.
It's that easy.
All right.
I keep it simple.
Thank you, Azure.
Thank you.
You know how those Marvel movies have little cut scenes at the end of the credits? Well, this podcast does as well. Azure, you smoked pot with Woody Harrelson?
I did smoke pot with Woody Harrelson. I got so goddamn stoned.
That's like taking communion with Jesus Christ.
I wouldn't go that far, but I mean, we might have talked about Jesus Christ. We might have even seen Jesus Christ. He's got this vape. So,
of course he does. I think you mean plural. I imagine he has like other people have a shoulder holster under their jacket. He's got like double vapes.
Got double vapes. No, this was after we had wrapped that day, and I think we were just all exhausted, and he's got several assistants like hanging out in his trailer, and both him and Matthew McConaughey have these really cool their own what do they call them? The silver trailers that are
I imagine for them it's like a dojo or a genie bottle.
Kinda. He was just like, hey, you that's a crazy transformation you made there, because I took off all the makeup and got back to myself, and he was like, you want to come and hang out? I wish I could do a Woody Harrelson accent, but I feel like I would really butcher it. So
it's funny how everybody does McConaughey after having worked with him, but that he's just so distinct that, yeah, I couldn't think of doing a Woody Harrelson.
I probably could if I really thought about it, but I mean, so he asked me to come hang out, and I was like, yeah, it's okay. And we weren't alone. He had several different assistants and stuff hanging out in the trailer, so we were all just hanging out. And his trailer was so cool. It's like he's got the wheatgrass. He's got all of his raw food stuff. And I think something hanging from the ceiling that he can do, like, pull-ups or something from. Uh-huh. And it's like this little, like, magical house. And then he's like, I don't remember how he said it, but he's like, I don't even know if he said anything. He just filled up this vape that was a giant balloon. I'm sure you've seen those.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the ones
that's
like
the original vape.
Yeah, like the ones that like expand out. Yeah. They're like these giant vapes. He just started filling it up, and I think he just passed me the balloon, and I'm like, all right.
Yeah. What else do you do? That's not peer pressure. That's seizing a moment.
It's not peer pressure at all. I mean, we were already done shooting, so it's not like we were going to set. It's not like we're working stoned.
Right.
And at the time, the problem was I didn't really smoke weed. And you know, he's got the good shit.
I imagine he's got the best shit.
So I took in a lot of that balloon. And I think I might have. I remember sort of floating out of that trailer a little bit.
Time truly became a flat circle.
Time truly became a flat circle. It did. It really did. But that was a good experience, because I think he's really funny and just, I mean, he truly is what you would think he is.
That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
All right.
He's exactly that. He's awesome.
Thank you, Azure.
You got it.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.